Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Good evening, ladies and gentlepersons. Well, future's coming much too slow. If you are listening and waiting for Cindy's Vinyl Vaults, I'm sorry to say that it will be postponed, I suppose, indefinitely until 11 o'clock on Monday evenings, because Beneath the Surface is back. We are back from a long summer hiatus. Maybe I should do an entire Beneath the Surface show on where we were and everything we did. But
well, I'm glad you're back.
Oh, Miss Cindy, how are you behind the glass?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm glad that you're back because, you know, it's different not having you here.
I hope, you know, that on the surface that sounds very neutral. It could be different positively or different negatively. So
a lot of people were wondering, are you okay?
Really?
Like every week we'd get phone calls asking, is Beneath the Surface coming back? Is Murano okay?
That's amazing. Hey, people, if you're there, if you're listening now, why aren't you calling in during our shows? That's when I would really like you, but I do appreciate it. I was talking to your father, Peter, from Cindy's Vinyl Vault, just before the show, and he told me that according to his count, and apparently he took it seriously, he actually did count, there were 55 people, at least 55 people, who called up the radio station here wondering where Beneath the Surface was. Hoping that it would come back. So I appreciate you all. I thank you for listening. I encourage you greatly to call up during the Beneath the Surface shows. It's only an hour, and we would love to have your feedback as we delve beneath the surface on our weekly topic. But those of you who have not listened to Beneath the Surface in the past, we've been here since February 2013. And we delve beneath the surface on a topic that relates to the human condition in a way that is either philosophical, religious, social, sometimes political, but always beneath the surface, at least almost always. Sometimes we have a lot of fun and we remain on the surface for a little bit. So speaking of fun and speaking of, I don't know what, but maybe you can fill it in for me. My guest and yours tonight, Mr. John Tudorus.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Now, are we, now let me try to guess. That. Is that a Brooklyn accent? What is it?
Sure. No, yeah.
John is a man of 1,000 voices. Can you, before we get going, could you do at least one president for me?
That's right.
I did not
inhale.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clinton. Our phone number here at BTS Radio is 978-454-4980. 978-454-4980. You know the phone number. If you don't, write it down. It's good to be back in the studio, John.
Yeah, it's very good to be here.
Yeah. I want to thank Sam Poulton for allowing us back after such a long hiatus. Had a little bit of trouble communicating with Sam at the beginning. He couldn't reach me, and then at the end I couldn't reach him. But it looks like finally we're on board, and we're back, and it's good to be here.
Yes, indeed.
And you are one of my rotating guests who disallowed me, actually, from bringing the Beneath the Surface radio show to an earlier time period.
Yes, I you know, I...
You're guilty.
I'm guilty as charged. I would actually like to be on the earlier one, but current schedule does not permit for it.
I understand. And I do value you, Kent, and Bob. And it looks like we might have Laurie for a few now and then, and who knows what other guest hosts we'll be able to conjure up between now and the end of the year. Hopefully... Some will write to us at Beneath the Surface Radio and either suggest somebody or suggest themselves. If you have anything you want to talk about and you want to be a guest one of these weeks, give me contact me. Go to my Facebook. Go to Beneath the Surface's Facebook page, actually, which is facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. And that's all one word. facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. And... send me your comments, either privately IM or on the page itself. Okay, Mr. John, before we get to our topic, do you have anything else interesting that you want to add to the pre-show?
Interesting how?
I don't know. Anything you would find interesting.
Like how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop?
Do you know? Do you know the average?
I believe, according to the wise Mr. Owl, 3.
Yeah.
It's a one.
What?
A two.
That's impossible.
A three. And then he eats.
Oh, okay.
And he bites into it, gets the center.
Yeah.
And that's how many it takes. 3.
All right. 3 licks and then
three,
a bite.
Three
yeah,
licks
then
a
the
bite.
Patients run out for him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That was very interesting. Let me write that down. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, and tonight's topic is nothing other than the meaning of life.
Wow, that's a big one. Who suggested that?
That is a huge one. I was, emailing or texting each other, and you suggested, why not just have the meaning of life? And I said, that's huge. How are we going to cover the meaning of life in less than an hour?
That's a good question. And I don't know.
And hopefully, since it was your idea, I'm putting the onus on you.
Okay.
You're going to give everybody listening tonight what the meaning of life is, the definition of the meaning of life, before this show ends.
Wow.
Yes.
They'll have to stay till the end then.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do it like right before the show ends to just keep everybody listening.
Yes, totally.
All right. So let's get started. Let's delve a little beneath the surface on this question because it's one of those 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 ultimate questions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've got your handful of questions that are just begging to be answered by every human heart and every human mind until, of course, they're brainwashed out of their curiosity by the world, which usually happens around adolescence. But some people keep it, and some people continue their curiosity unto wisdom, and that's one of the topics we'll talk about tonight. But the question, I tell you what, I'll start it, all right? This is one thing I think about when I think about this question of the meaning of life. Human beings, after saying mama, which basically means food, they're looking for food, mama, and dada, and then no, because they hear that, they parent that back, because parents are always saying no. After those 3 semi-words, the first words that human beings speak, once they're able to put a thought and a word together, is what and why. What and why. Now, everybody who has a child, I want you to tell me if I'm wrong. Call me up here at 978-454-4980. What is it? 978-454-4980, right?
Yeah.
All right. See, after all these months, I still remember it. Let me know if I'm wrong, because it seems to me that babies, once they start talking, they say, what? What's this? What's this? What's this? They want to know what things are. And once they get a little past, I mean, just a little past that, they want to know why things are the way they are. What and why, which denote meaning and purpose. What and why, meaning and purpose. And I propose to you, Mr. John, that we are meaning and purpose seekers as a species.
Yeah, I can buy that.
And it makes us unique from all the other animals. No grasshopper, no snake is wondering what or why about anything. They're sort of just seeking to eat and to procreate.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And survive.
And survive, right.
Which is
eating and procreating, right?
Naturally.
Survival of the individual and the species. But we go beyond that, and one of the indications is, right there at the beginning of our lives, we say, we want to know what and why we seek meaning and purpose. Now, it seems, John, that particularly our education system, but our society in general, militates against people seeking those big questions about meaning and purpose.
I would agree. I mean, to a certain degree, kids naturally tail off of the big why question. Why? Mm-hmm. Usually right around the time when they get to the age of reason and things start putting themselves together and they can start actually deciding on things and reasoning through things. But the why is, instead of being intuitively or explicitly asked, rather, is more underneath the radar as far as putting things together. It's still there. Mm. It's still there. But like anything, as far as the formation of people, it's not just what's naturally there. It's also how it's nurtured.
How it's nurtured. So in other words, our minds have to be nurtured in a way that that enables us and invites us to continue that search.
That's correct. Absolutely. So if we're taking, let's say we're whether it's public school, private school, wouldn't matter. Let's say one of the goals and aims of the environment is not just to prepare people for functions or jobs, but actually to get them to think critically, and to foster that part of us that wants to ponder the bigger questions, then it's going to happen. It's going to happen. But if it's something where it's just about, all right, let's read, writing, arithmetic, let's get a little history in there, and we're not actually exploring anything about ultimate purpose or anything of that nature, it's not part of the DNA, it's not part of the atmosphere, it tends to get weaned out of people over time.
And if it gets weaned out of people, obviously their religious sense, which is natural, we find it in cave paintings, it's so natural to man.
Sure.
The religious sense begins to deaden and stifle and deaden, and it's sort of just placid somewhere deep inside, but it's not being nurtured. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the religious sense and the reason sense are actually intertwined with each other. Mm. In fact, when you go back even to many of the ancient cultures, particularly in ancient Greece, you'll find that the beginnings of philosophy, and intertwined with that, of course, would be science too. In the roots, they're the same. So all that reason discovery is intertwined with the search for ultimate truth, which you find in religion too.
Now, when you say ultimate truth, I mean somebody listening right now is saying, oh, there they go on with that truth thing again. And how is anybody supposed to know ultimate truth? When you say ultimate truth, do you mean, if a person were to ask why about something and to continue to go and ask why with every answer that you give them, like, for example, why are you here tonight? Well, I'm here tonight because I want to be on the radio. Why do you want to be in the radio? I want to be in the radio because I think I have something good to say to people. Why do you think you have something good to... Well, I think that because of this. Well, why do you think that? Well, I think that because of the... Why? If you why yourself all the way back, is there an end?
Ultimately, there is.
And what is that end?
Well, that's part of the discovery. But the one way that we know that there has to be an end is the idea that it's impossible to have an infinite regression of causes. So, meaning that if we're looking at the whys, another way to say is, you know, we're looking at the cost. So we see effects, and then we say, okay, well, this has happened. Okay, why did that happen? Mm. And if we go over time, and not just over time, but just how things are connected to each other.
Yes.
So in principle, right? Yeah. And then we keep going. Well, you can't go to have an infinite. There has to be a first.
So if you were to say, well, Hurricane Harvey happened and it devastated Houston. You know, why did that occur? You could have if you're a meteorologist, you'd have some kind of meteorological answer to why that hurricane began. And then if you're a cosmologist, you'll have some kind of an astrophysicist, you might somehow speak about the tilt of the Earth and how that affects weather and how that eventually in September, usually these storms and these hurricanes come and this one was going to happen right the way that it did. And if you go all the way back to, well, why did, you know, how did that affect that in order to affect this? You'd have to go all the way back, if you truly were honest with yourself, you'd have to go all the way back to the Big Bang.
Yes.
Which, of course, elicits the question, well, how or why did the Big Bang bang?
Yes.
And if there is a Big Bang, mustn't there be a Big Banger?
Dude, I like the way you're thinking.
And so then, all right. Well, we'll have to pause right now because I do want to get into that line of thinking that what is or was before the Big Bang, if you can even say the word before regarding the Big Bang, and we'll jettison back to our main topic, which is the meaning of life. I promise you, it'll get more and more focused as we go along. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. We'll be right back. Funny. I'm thinking, oh, this is us.
In a yellow submarine.
Gosh, Cindy, I didn't know what you were doing there. Very interesting. At first, I thought it was like a Bambi commercial or something. And then all of a sudden, it turns classical, and we all live in a yellow submarine. But anyway. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Welcome back to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, here every Monday nights between 10 and 11. And for Cindy's Vinyl Vault's fans, I apologize for that. But she will, I promise, she'll be on right after we scram at 11 p.m. on Monday evenings, as was before our hiatus, before the summer. Okay, so we were talking about meaning and purpose, and how what and why, which denote meaning and purpose, separate us humans from all the other creatures that we know of, plants, animals, etc., because we seek to understand. We don't just seek to live and to eat and procreate, which basically means to continue to survive. We do that, but of course, being personal, we do a whole lot more. We seek understanding, and we seek to love. So, John, take it from there.
Wow. That's a nice summary.
So right before the break, we were talking about how if you were to ask why, all the way back to the Big Bang.
Yep.
It's sort of like that's the first domino in all things that occur in the universe, including here on Earth. Go ahead.
Well, it's the first domino that involves matter, meaning like the physical universe.
Yeah.
But before then, we really don't know. I mean, even then, the Big Bang itself is a theory, but it's one so far that has not been disproven.
Right.
So this idea that all the entire bit of matter...
Time and space also.
Yeah, time and space as well, were just in this softball-sized...
Oh, much less than that.
Much less than that, probably.
Yeah.
And
it just, microscopic.
And just exploded outward from there.
As a matter of fact, I even question the microscopic part. I know that the going term recently is there was a singularity that's exploded, and when it exploded, there in that instant created time, space, and matter, and of course, as it evolved, we have what we have now. I'm not even sure that there was a singularity, though. It might have just come out of absolutely nothing. But regardless, in order for this to have been created and banged, there must have been something outside of time, space, and matter in order to do that. In other words, if you have all kinds of dominoes, you have to be there has to be some force outside of the first domino that creates the dominoes in the first place, but then starts the domino effect.
That's right. In ancient Greece, they would call that the unmoved mover or the uncaused cause. So using the analogy of dominoes that are all set up, there's that one person who is not a domino that causes all, they set up all the dominoes,
yeah,
and they cause all those dominoes to fall in succession.
According to exactly how they want them to fall.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And they are outside of that chain of dominoes per se.
Right, right. Okay, so then I guess this is where philosophy leaps, it takes a leap to religion.
It does. There's a, and just to give a little background on this, so, you'll find the ideas we just spoke about in characters like Aristotle and to a lesser degree like Plato and Socrates and some of the ancients, and they were all looking for that first cause of everything.
Yes.
They might have used the term first principle, really the same thing. What is it that caused everything to happen? So, to some degree, I'll bet people have heard of things like, earth, fire, water, and those were actually the earliest guesses. They were looking at things in matter. But ultimately, as a succession of philosophers built from one to the other, they started delving deeper and deeper, and which, lends to the idea that we're not just individuals who think on our own. We actually build on the knowledge of others. And ultimately, it got to the point where, it's even bigger than these things. And before you know it, you get to guys like Aristotle who realize that this first causer of everything else has to themselves not be caused by anything else out of necessity.
Mm.
Out of necessity.
Because you can't infinitely regress.
That's right. That's right.
Nothing would exist now if that were the case.
Right. You can't have that infinite chain of dominoes. There has to be one outside of that chain of dominoes that sets up and causes all those to happen that is not part of that chain.
So Aquinas would make the jump and say that this cause outside of time, space, and matter is what Christians call God.
Well, that's right. That's right. And so just to put in perspective in history, Aristotle's about 350, 400 years before Christ. It's right before ancient Israel and ancient Greece intersected with the kingdom of Alexander the Great. And so by the time you get to the Christians, they've actually already been Hellenized. They're actually using a Greek translation of the Old Testament, the Septuagint. When you look at some of the New Testament writers like John and Paul, and some may even argue James, you'll actually find very strong elements of Greek philosophy and terms that they use. For example, John, in the beginning of his gospel, in the beginning was the Word. Well, the Word is Logos, right? The supreme knowledge, the supreme truth.
The ancients used that term Logos in a similar but a little different way. The Stoics believed that the Logos was a kind of a divine mind, if you will, that enables us human minds to understand things as they are. It's sort of like a medium to reality. And if you're not in tune with the Logos, then you can't understand anything as they are. Christianity would say, yes, as a matter of fact, that Logos is what, like you said, the Gospel of John and other places in Scripture call the Word, with a capital W. And that Word is the expression, the eternal wisdom expression, that eternal intelligence, or that eternal Word of the Father.
Yes.
According to Christians.
John used that term that was used in philosophy, but then some may argue against saying that he Christianized, but really what he did is he took that and, in a certain very real sense, brought it to its ultimate conclusion of really what it would be.
What it is, yeah.
Exactly.
Now, it's interesting how Christians then, Christian philosophers would say, since this is the case, since that logos, or that divine spirit that enables people to understand reality clearly, is actually the Son of God, then if you are not looking at the world through Christ, you're not seeing it as it is.
That's a natural conclusion.
You're not seeing reality clearly.
Yes.
Because that's the medium that the ancient Greeks were talking about, who, of course, were not monotheistic. But it's the medium. And it's...
Well,
I find it very curious, John.
I will add just to that briefly that even though as a culture they were not... Those who appealed to reason, such as Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, were monotheistic in principle, recognizing that even though it's a good and natural thing for people to have a religious practice, that ultimately they're actually, through reason alone, they would realize that there actually has to be only one principle.
Yes, if you read their books, they basically were not happy with and did not accept the multiple gods of their time.
Because it was unreasonable.
Because it was unreasonable, right. You can't have more than one divine being that is the creator and sustainer of the universe, and who is being itself. And that brings us to Israel introduced to the world. But before we get to that, I just want to back up a little bit with the point I was making about the logos, that it makes sense then that when you reject the logos, in other words, when you reject the Son of God, you reject reason.
Yes.
Unwittingly, but you do that because you're rejecting that which enables you to see clearly.
That's correct. It basically, when people are pursuing truth, if they're to follow to its natural conclusion, they have to be intellectually honest the whole way through.
Yeah.
So if someone has, some prejudices, some biases in a certain way, if you put all that aside and you say, what is the natural conclusion of this reason thought process? Mm-hmm. And are there any errors in it? Okay. And we take those out because we realize that truth exists whether or not my intellect is conforming to it.
Yeah. So then if somebody who rejects the word, capital W, also rejects reason.
Yes.
Even if they don't intentionally reject reason, because he basically, literally, he is reason. That's what logos means. So if they reject reason incarnate or the divine logos, it's not, and let me get your take on this. It's not all that surprising that you would come, you would end up with a snowball effect that is now secular progressivism that does not understand or can't tell the difference between males and females. Is trying to remake a reality, to reconstruct a reality in order to feel better about themselves because they can't seem to see or understand or accept reality as it is.
I would say yes, I agree with you on that, and it's basically hit in two main ways.
Mm.
So from the religion standpoint, you'll find many more minor movements, but the main one, because we still see the effects of it now, is the Protestant revolt, or some would call the revolution. More properly, though, it is a revolt in the 1500s. So that's actually, to some degree, actually rejecting, although not fully, up front, it's actually rejecting the one logos in favor of faulty human reasoning. Then within the next 100 years from that, it inevitably happens on the philosophical, on the scientific end of things. So mm-hmm. where philosophy has this unnatural separation from science. And so what ends up happening is philosophy, which is love of wisdom, and all those higher questions, is separated out what we call the Cartesian Revolution, so in the Enlightenment period. So
all right, don't lose people.
Oh yeah. So I certainly don't want to lose people. But basically, just know that in time that there are these watershed moments that happen, where this unity of thought has basically been broken up artificially, and that's
because people have been unable to see clearly. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. And because there's sort of this in mass. Rejection starts with the first principle that God and all that he...
Well, a lot of people are probably saying, well, people didn't accept the Logos in his pure form as revealed through divine revelation.
Correct.
Until Christianity. So are you saying that they were just as bad as those who actually had him and rejected him?
Could you rephrase that?
Is it worse to have something and reject it than it is to not have it yet?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Very, very much so, particularly if someone actually knows at least to some degree of what they have.
Right. So that was my point. Pre-Christianity was at a disadvantage. Post-Christianity is at a much, you can make the argument, a much worse disadvantage.
Yes.
By virtue of its rejection.
Yes, okay. We're right now, and I know you've mentioned this before, and I would agree with you on this, that we are in a post-Christian society.
Okay.
So we would say, using a broad brushstroke, that most people don't actually believe the full tenets. In fact, even those who would you consider mainline Christians, like Catholics and many of your Protestants and your Orthodox, many of them don't actually believe the tenets of their own faith.
Sure. Just because you call yourself something doesn't mean you necessarily believe it.
Right. But then some of the skeleton still remains as far as certain social norms, ethical practices, to some degree are still there.
With Catholicism, of course, we call this cultural Catholicism or cafeteria Catholicism, depending on which way you go.
Or Christer Catholic, Christmas and Easter only, CEO Catholics.
And of course, that's not exactly what God had in mind when he established a church. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface Radio here at WCAP, and we're talking about the meaning of life. Yes, the meaning of life. Now, let's get back to that. Speaking of Aristotle, I believe it was him, but there's a lot of other philosophers out there that would concur, that in order to understand what something is, you need to understand its end.
Yes, its purpose.
Okay, its purpose. So let me just have that sink in for listeners. In order to be clear on what something is, you have to understand why it is or what its end or purpose is. So in other words, I tune into Valley Patriot newspaper September edition. It's at your newsstands right now, because I wrote a whole article about this, but on meaning and purpose and the purpose of education. But if I were to stumble upon an object, if my mind could understand that this object is for the purpose of human beings being seated on it, then I could pretty clearly understand what that object is. It's a chair.
Yes.
Okay. If I come across an object that has blankets on it and pillows and it's pretty clear to me that this object is for the purpose of people lying down and going to sleep on it.
That's a bed.
It's pretty it's pretty clear to me then.
I'm going two for two right
then
now.
You're going two for two, absolutely. So what I'm saying is that if you want to understand the meaning of life, let's just take the whole big shebang here. The meaning of life, you have to understand the end or purpose of life. So I do want to get to the meaning of life and give an answer to that, at least your answer, before the show's end. But first, we need to delve beneath the surface on the purpose or end of life, because that will give us the indication of what meaning is. 978-4980 is our phone number. I'm Paul Morano. That's John Tudorus. You are you, and we all will be back right after this.
Yeah.
Poetry. Poetry in motion. Indeed. Poetry in motion. What is a... why is the chicken crossing the road, John?
That is an excellent question.
In order to see poultry in motion.
Boom, boom, hey, yo, if you day, hey, that, boom, boom, hey, yo.
978-454-4980 is our phone number. Call up just to say hi. Tell me you're listening. All those listeners that we allegedly have, but no, everyone's, some people are intimidated to call John.
They are?
It saddens me.
I know. Well, what they don't realize is they can't see you. You're a very huggable person. I've never hugged you, but I fist bumped you, and you're a very fist bumpable person, too.
I am. I fist bump with the best of them.
Yes, you do.
I do. All right. So before the break, we were mentioning the important point that in order to understand something's meaning, first understand its purpose. When you know its end, then you know what it is. True?
True that, though.
Let's look at the meaning of life. In order to understand the meaning of life, or at least be more clear on the question, first, look at the purpose or the end of life. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Jontosaurus, what is the end or purpose of life before we can get to the meaning?
It is happiness.
Happiness, the H word.
Yes, the H word.
Now, do you mean happiness as in fluffy feelings, or do you mean it as fulfilling one's being?
Wow.
Boy, I just fed you one, huh?
I will just take option number B.
Yes. Okay. So then it's not a modern, fluffy kind of happiness. It's really, nope. What you mean is the flourishing of the human being by virtue of acting and behaving like they're supposed to.
Exactly. It's a fulfillment. Exactly. It's our potential being actualized is one way to put it.
That's for you philosophers.
Yeah. So that we basically, what we are made to be comes more into being. So who we are meant to be, that is actually how ultimate happiness is attained.
So let me give an analogy. If we were a plant, if we were to be completely flowered, that is what you're talking about, right? By flourishing and being fulfilled.
Flowered and then fruiting.
Flowered and fruited. I'll buy that.
Flowered, fruited. And if you're one more F, that would be good too.
If you're a stagnated plant, though, you don't produce. You have dead fruit. Your flowers look ugly.
Very unhappy plant.
A very unhappy plant. Now, look, just put that over to human beings. We have similar situations. We have stagnated human beings that sometimes are depressed and anxious and need this fulfillment or this happiness that you're talking about. How does one get it?
That is a great question, and I'll start off by giving you the answer from one Mr. Aristotle.
Okay, before you do that,
yes,
are you about to give me the meaning of life?
How to attain it?
No, wait. Is how to attain the purpose of life, which is happiness or fulfillment.
Yeah.
How to attain it. Is that the meaning of life? So in other words, if life's purpose is fulfillment,
sure,
happiness, then life's meaning would be what?
Well, I'm going to hit it first from the reason standpoint. And then inevitably we have to bring in some assistance from outside.
Okay.
So from the reason standpoint, in order to pursue that happiness, which of course we know from our Declaration of Independence talks about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
In order to pursue it, we have to live a moral and ethical life. In fact, the only reason why living a moral and ethical life is actually good for us is because it allows us to be more perfectly happy.
I want this to be crystal clear. Because you're obviously not the first one saying this. This is from a long line tradition of thought in the human race. That if you were to put religion to the side for a second, even though that's impossible for religious people, just place it in your mind over a little bit to the right. If you were to just say that living the good and moral life makes human beings happy and doing the opposite makes them unhappy. Wouldn't you want to live the moral life? just for this short 8, perhaps 9, if you're lucky, decade existence that we have on Earth.
Yes.
So it makes sense that if morality brings about this fulfillment that you're talking about, then live a virtuous and moral life for your own sake.
I would agree with you, absolutely. But just for full disclosure for the listeners, I'm still practicing.
Yes.
Yes. So I'm still far from it. So what's very interesting, though, is that Aristotle, who of all the ancient philosophers probably had the best exposition on this point. Mm-hmm. He had wrote a piece on ethics with the big punchline that it's all about looking to be happy and wanting to be happy. He actually acknowledged that it's not possible to be fully happy in this life.
Really?
Yes. So if we go to that part about how our potential is actualized, it's fulfilled. Mm. Well, in this life, we can't fully actualize that because there's a component to us, which is, for example, our matter. Our bodies die, right?
Yeah.
But our spirit is immortal.
Okay.
And even Aristotle recognized that in ancient Greece.
Right.
And so there's this component of us that cannot be fully happy in this life. And that, right. And then
let me do the however there.
Yeah.
However, would you say, and would they say, that living the good and virtuous life brings you a good amount of happiness?
The
most you can get in this life.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So then, living a selfish, self-centered existence.
Very miserable. Very miserable. Don't even try it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't get yourself into vice, obsession, or addiction, especially.
And if you do, the remedy is to pursue the opposing virtue.
Okay.
Yep. So whatever that vice is, and to one degree or another, we could almost say that probably everyone has them to one degree or another.
Yep.
Find out what the opposing virtue is and look to practice it, and that will be your remedy.
Okay. So then, to a certain degree, we can find happiness in this life if we do it right.
Yes.
But not to a full, complete degree.
Correct.
Okay. So then that's something that transcends this world needs to be fulfilled.
That is absolutely
and
correct.
And that something is spiritual, which means that it has a spiritual fulfillment.
Yes,
does
indeed.
It not?
Yes, indeed.
And that yearning that every human heart seems to have for everlasting life, for perfect joy, for perfect love and understanding, that yearning that every human heart has always seemed to have, that is found after this earthly existence, is it not?
It is.
In its fullness?
In its fullness. In its fullness.
So then, would you say then, the purpose or end of our existence is what?
So the ultimate purpose and end is actually union with God. That's what we are actually created for.
So he created us as persons because he's personal.
Yes.
In order to have a relationship that continues past this life into the next.
That is correct. So that uncaused cause, that first mover of everything else that caused everything else to be, isn't just some remote...
It's not just a force.
It's not just a force.
A remote force. It's a personal God.
Personal God, perfect intelligence, perfect charity, perfect love, perfect wisdom, all the virtues, all those good things that Aristotle talked about in pursuing happiness on a natural level are analogous to the perfection of those in God. And he desires that we also participate in that perfection of all those good things.
But in order to and we should do a whole show on original sin in the fall of man because it's extremely important. But in order to overcome ourselves, our attraction to sin, our attraction to vice, our obsessions, even our addictions, in order to overcome ourselves, we need, at this point, we need help from above, don't we?
Well, we do.
The human race is kind of like in quicksand. They can't get themselves out by themselves.
Even Aristotle recognized that it was very difficult to pursue all those virtuous things. So he recognized, it's almost like he found this map through his reason. And he recognized what this map was, but he also recognized, again, being intellectually honest, that it was very, very difficult for people to practice that alone by themselves, left to their own devices.
To clarify that, you're saying that pre-Christian philosophers understood the roadmap but couldn't fully get there. And they knew they couldn't fully get there.
Largely, yes.
So Christian philosophers took what they understood with the pre-Christian philosophers, the good things that they understood, what human reason was able to attain, and enabled us to understand that perfect fulfillment is possible because we can have a relationship, a union with the with our Creator.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's where it's found.
Yes. Yes, so the reason reaches up to certain heights, but only goes so far as understanding these things. And then this is where ancient Israel, and then to a fuller amount in Christianity, we see that the Creator comes down and actually gives us additional, not just information, but himself.
Right. Help. Yeah. Help. Strength. Not only light, but strength.
Yes.
Right? Not only the truth, but the means to live that truth.
That's correct.
Those two things are huge because to a certain degree you can attain truth and be extremely frustrated like a lot of the ancient Israelites were because they knew the moral law but they couldn't live it. And Christ came and he said, no more excuses anymore. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And you know what he did with divorce in the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke.
Yep.
He said, it used to be said... You can divorce your wives. Just, you know, say it three times, and you're all set. But I say to you, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery.
That's right. He said it was that way from the beginning.
And he said...
And that Moses only permitted it due to the hardness of people's hearts.
So Christ came to reestablish the fullness of the truth. Why? Not because he was mean. Because just the opposite. Because he wanted us to attain the fullness of happiness.
That's right.
Which can be attained to a large degree here, but obviously that is going to flower into eternity.
Absolutely. So what that also leads to is this idea that our ultimate destiny is not here on earth. It's actually far greater than that.
So this is, earthly life is like being in the womb.
Yes.
We tend to, if we look around, we tend to think that's all there is, but we know that there's something greater.
Much, much greater.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of the saints, we celebrate their feast days, not on the day that they were born, but on the day that they died, because that is being seen like being born into eternal life.
Yeah. In fact, even Jesus, when he was on earth, and they asked about John the Baptist, who many recognize as being a very great man, and he said that even the least in heaven was greater than John. Of course, this was before John himself had died and passed on to eternal life, but this idea that once someone is in that state of death where they can't err anymore, as far as that goes, and that their being actually comes to a higher degree of perfection. All those things that happiness that we pursue in this life hits to this fullness of what we are meant to be, hits to a much higher degree.
Only 4 minutes left, so let me go back then to the what and the why of life, the meaning and purpose. Right now, it seems like what you're saying is that the end or purpose of life is fulfillment, is happiness, and it can only be fully attained in this life, in the next life, by virtue of being in union with God.
Yes.
And that's what Christians call heaven.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you can begin your heaven experience here on earth in the church with the receiving divine life, with the sacraments, being part of the body of Christ, etc. But you're saying that flowers after death.
Yes, all right. Flowers.
All right. So if that's the end or purpose, then if that's the why, you know, why do we exist? To be with God for all eternity and complete and fulfillment of our being. Then... how about the what? What is life?
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's an excellent question. All right, you go first.
That's why I'm here. No, hey, wait a minute. I'm the host. I ask the questions.
What is life?
Yeah, what is life?
God is life.
Thank you. So we got the why, being in union with him.
Yes.
So you're saying that the what is actually him.
That's right. Thomas Aquinas, who's alive about 800 years ago, actually,
he was alive what?
About 800 years ago.
Oh, 800. You said 800. 800. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Need to interpret 800. You. Yeah.
So he would say that God is actually the only necessary being and that we are contingent beings.
Right. So, in other words, God is life. He is being. And anything else that exists is at the pleasure of he who is life.
We could reasonably say that God loved into existence all of creation.
Yes.
Through his own generosity, free will generosity, because not just because he decided to on a whim, but because that's actually who he is, to be fruitful and generous.
So then God is life. It's not enough to say God is living. Creatures are living, like plants and animals, but God is life. And the purpose of our existence is to be in union with him who is life, and hence living with God in heaven for all eternity.
Yes.
Okay, so there you have, ladies and gentle persons, John Tudorus' understanding of meaning and purpose, though I had to...
And I will just add it, not just in heaven as a disembodied soul,
yes,
but actually, again, the happiness where we come to a full completion.
Yes.
So our body, which had died previously, would then the only natural conclusion of what should happen is that that body itself should be resurrected and reunited with the soul, so that person is fully complete.
And this is what Christians celebrate on Easter. Not simply the resurrection of the soul, but the resurrection of the entire person, which includes the body, but a glorified state.
Absolutely, in perfect happiness.
There you have it. The purpose, the meaning, they both coincide. It all comes together in God. Thank you for listening. It's always a great time for John for you to come in and talk about these topics. Next week, same time, same channel, Beneath the Surface, different guest, different topic. Thanks for listening, everybody. Good to be back. We'll see you next week.
...980 WCAP, Lowell, Haverhill, Lawrence, Methuen, Nashua, and Salem, New Hampshire, serving the Merrimack Valley.
Tensions with North Korea, Irma on the move. I'm Ann Cates. Tensions between the U.S. and North Korea are growing after its latest nuclear test. Correspondent Brian Todd reports Pyongyang's burgeoning weapons ambitions caught the West by surprise.
New warnings of a young dictator's nuclear and missile program that caught the world off guard.
These are startling developments in a short period of time that we're measuring in terms of weeks rather than in terms of a year time span.
North Korea has increased the strength of its nuclear bomb blasts over the last decade, from about 1,000 tons of TNT to 10,000 tons last year at this time, to Sunday's test, estimated at 50 to 120,000 tons of TNT. That means it could be 3 to 8 times stronger than the bomb dropped on Hiroshima.
Hurricane Irma is now a Category 4 storm as it takes aim at the Caribbean. Meteorologist Tom Sater.
This system right now is just as strong as Harvey was when it devastated Rockport, Texas. The winds are the same at 130, and it's moving right over the northern islands of the Lesser Antilles. That's St. Kitts and Nevis. That's Antigua, Barbuda, Anguilla. In fact, might move right over that. Then it's the U.S., British Virgin Islands that have a watch. That'll go to a warning as well as Puerto Rico.
A state of emergency has been declared in Florida, so cities and counties can prepare for a possible landfall by Irma. President Trump will announce tomorrow whether he'll end the DACA program, which protects the children of illegal immigrants from deportation. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state's top prosecutor may take the Trump administration to court.
In a statement today, Democrats Cuomo and Attorney General Eric Schneiderman call the possible shutdown a, quote, cruel action. They believe the suit would, quote, protect the Dreamers and the state's sovereign interest in the fair and equal application of the law. The end of DACA would directly affect more than 40,000 New Yorkers. I'm Marla Smajeras.
S&P futures down 8, the NASDAQ futures off by 18. I'm Ann Cates.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Networks Advanced Firewall Solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
War, poverty, and disaster have left millions of children around the world orphaned, abandoned, alone. When their parents can't be there, SOS Children's Villages is there. SOS Children's Villages is the world's largest nonprofit for orphans.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.